If you've ever felt like your organization is hitting a ceiling despite your best effort, you might actually be the bottleneck yourself, holding things back. You know, kind of like my daughter's favorite song by Taylor Swift, where she says something like, "It's me. Hi, I'm the problem. It's me." But what if the key to unlocking your team's potential lies in transforming your company's culture? Today's guest, who's known as Mr. Culture, is here to show you how to do just that. Joining us is Chris Dyer, a global thought leader on leadership and company culture, a best-selling author, and he was named one of the top 50 voices in leadership. Chris's journey from being the bottleneck in his own company to transforming it into a high-performing powerhouse, I find to be very inspiring. Today, we're going to give you the keys to creating an exceptional company culture that allows your whole team to thrive and deliver outstanding results. I'm Damon Lemby, the CEO of LearnIt, a live learning platform that has upskilled over 2 million people over the past 3 decades. And you're listening today to the Learn It All podcast, the podcast where great leaders aren't born or made. They are constantly in the making. All right, let's get ready and dive into today's episode. Chris, great to have you here today, buddy.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
In researching you and learning more about you, you've pretty much gone all in on culture. How did you become Mr. Culture?
By total accident and by screwing it all up. I had an organization. We were doing okay. We were growing. And then, you know, this giant recession hits in 08, 09. And I'm looking around going, we got to fix this. Come on, everybody. And everyone's sitting there waiting for me to come up with all the answers, waiting for me to ride in on my white horse, you know, and save the day. And I'm like, I need ideas. I need help. I need other people to come and try to help. And I realized that I had created a culture where the ideas came from me. Everything got approved through me. You know, basically I was the brain of the organization and like nothing really happened if I didn't have some part in it. And probably early on, because I was the one who understood the business and most people coming in didn't, and I had to learn, like I was the person who gave them the ideas or gave them the training. And so we never kind of like turn anybody else into experts. We never thought about how to leverage what they're good at. And so, you know, as I'm looking around complaining, I realize it's all my fault. This is the reason that we're in this position, not because of anything my employees did or didn't do. And I just said, well, okay, let's change it. We figured out how to change it. I spent a lot of years studying it and what makes a great culture. And I can walk you through what some of those things are. But there's a really specific framework that now I teach other organizations how to implement and they can be really successful with. But once we did that, then it was like people started asking me, hey, like we noticed that now your company is like on the top of this list and the top of that list. And it's because my people were just like killing it. As soon as I set them free and I removed all these stupid obstacles and stopped getting in their way, they just took off and were amazing. And so people started asking me to come and talk about what we were doing and how that worked and how they could do it. And that just, again, accidentally, I started talking about culture. Someone asked me to write a book. I was stupid enough to say yes, because that was really hard. And it just kind of has steamrolled or snowballed, whatever, to, you know, from there.
Yeah. So it sounds like essentially you were the bottleneck in your organization, right? You know, You were the guy with all the answers. You had it all. Everybody was relying on you. And how were you able to have the self-awareness? Was it out of like necessity you had to? How did you have the self-awareness to be able to learn how to do this differently?
I think a lot of times for many of us, when something really big happens, it's when we have those moments of reflection, right? You have a heart attack and you survive, you might realize your diet and exercise need to change. Or if a close friend, you know, dies of a heart attack. I mean, something big has to happen sometimes for us to go, whoa, maybe I need to rethink what I'm doing. And that was that moment for me. 30% of our sales gone, 40% of our receivables gone. You know, businesses are completely disappeared. How are we going to survive? We have to have big ideas and change things in a really important way in order for that to happen. So that was that moment, right, where I had to look myself in the mirror and go, yeah, it's me. I'm the problem. And I'm also the one who's going to have to, which was a bit of a conundrum. It was like, but I'm also the one who's going to fix it, which has always been the problem. But I was going to fix it once and for all and not be in that position ever again. And to your point, one of the things I had to do was to change my behaviors. And the first behavior that I changed was that I would no longer give anybody the idea.
I love that. I love that. Yes.
There were some big ideas I had to implement that strategically made sense for me as a CEO, but everything else below that, someone would come in and say, hey, the client wants to do this. And I would say, whatever you decide, go with that. I trust you. And they, yeah, but I really, if you could just look at the, no. And it took a year of me saying that to my people over and over and over again. No, I trust you. Go with what you think works. Let me know how it goes. Let's talk through, you know, if you don't see the result you want, we can talk about ideas. We can brainstorm together. But I kept putting it back on them. You decide what ultimately to do. And I trust you and we'll go from there.
I love that. I absolutely love that. And part of the interviewing process at Learnit and what I talk about with our customers too is when you bring somebody in, I'm like, I don't want you to come in and be on a railroad track. I want you to try. We're going to give you the space to make mistakes, but I need you to think for yourself, you know, and nothing you're going to do really is going to destroy everything. Everything is going to fall apart. You're going to make mistakes, but mistakes are where you really learn. But I also think it's tough because sometimes the first reaction is just to jump in, right? Jump in and give the answer. But what it sounds you did really was, you sat back and said, hey, you figure it out. And then of course, if people, I guess, wanted to run ideas by you, you do that. But it takes patience and really putting trust into your team.
Yeah. And there was a few areas where we had guardrails. I mean, there could be decisions people could make that could really adversely impact the company. That was pretty rare. And we, you know, and the guardrails might be, I might set up where another leader would be the one to say that. Me as the CEO, I had to get out of the business of telling people what to do and what the idea was and what, and was this okay or not okay? That was really, really important. I instead changed my whole job description to no longer am I helping with sales or am I helping with operations or whatever. Like, I'm creating the strategic vision for the company. And the rest of my time is, how do I take a machete to all of the crap and all in the way of all my people? How do I make it easier for them to work, easier to make decisions, get them more resources, get them more training, talk about how to make things better for them, for our clients? How do we improve? You know, how do we listen to our clients and then go and actually do something about it and change our software, or change our process? Like that became my only focus. I literally ignored sales. I help sales in the sense of like helping them brainstorm or helping their process and things. But like, I wasn't saying, well, how many calls have we made today? And how many clients have we brought in? And what does our pipeline look like? Like that kind of stupid crap I used to say all the time. I stopped talking about that. And what happened? Our sales went through the roof because I was more focused on the people part and how to help them be successful. And they were far better salespeople than I ever was. And they would go and kill it when I got all the junk out of their way.
So when you freed them up and then you kind of gave them the mindset, the thoughts of like, hey, we could come through with our ideas and get behind them and really just give it a shot.
Yeah. I always joke with salespeople. It's like, imagine, you remember that slip and slide thing we had as kids, that big yellow tarp, you put it on a hill and you slide down it. A lot of managers will stand there and say, well, how many times did you slide down the slide? And I think a good manager says, I'm going to get you some more water. I'm going to go get you some soap to put on that so you can go down faster. So I can help you have more fun and do the thing more often, not stand there and go, well, you went down the slide 6 times this hour. Can you please rate your happiness? Instead, I was like, how do I help you do the thing better and not worry about how many times or all of that? The other kind of metric stuff of like, are you doing your job?
I love that. You know, we do annual and then biannual individual sales business plans. And one of the things that we ask each individual to come with is roadblocks. What are some roadblocks in your way that we could help eliminate? Like you said, take the machete and get rid of them. And we don't want to turn it into a, you know, complaining victim session. we want them to feel comfortable to say, hey, Damon, you know, we don't have this or I need this. And then you remove those roadblocks from them and give them the opportunity to be successful. And like you said, instead of micromanaging how many calls were made, how many meetings were set, you know, give them the autonomy to do their work after removing those roadblocks.
Yeah. And that's great that you're having that check-in. Now, I found I had to do it even more often. So I did what I created this thing called the one question survey. We ditched the annual survey and we went to this one question survey, one question per week. I probably did it maybe 47, 48 weeks out of the year. We didn't always get it done, but most of the weeks. And I would ask them things like, who's killing it for us? Or, you know, who should we be recognizing? Well, good stuff like that. Where are you struggling? What resource do you not have? What roadblocks do you have? But once a quarter, I always ask the question, how am I as the CEO getting in your way? Because that was something that I knew I used to do. And so I kept asking that question. And I was convinced every time I asked that question that finally they would come back to me and say, nothing. There's nothing you're doing that's getting in our way. That at some point I should have reached nirvana and I couldn't do it. And the answer was never, nope, that would never happen. They always had something to tell me. There was some resource, I could approve something faster. We could get more budget over here. Like, you know, get this software development done faster. There's always something that I had an impact on to make their lives better. And that was great to know because I could help them or at least help them understand why we couldn't go any faster, about why it was taking the time that it was taking. So they understood where we really were, and they had the transparency on that.
And I want to get back, I want to talk about transparency because I know that's number one pillar in your seven pillars. But it also sounds like, Chris, which I think is awesome, is that you know how to accept feedback, right? You know, because it obviously your people feel comfortable enough to come to you and share their thoughts and share their feelings without feeling like you're going to either get super defensive, which is huge. You know, I had lunch recently with this young woman who was killing it at her organization in sales. And 6 months later, I had lunch with her and I said, how are you doing at so-and-so company? And she's like, I left. I'm like, why would you leave? And she said, because I have a new manager. My new manager is terrible. Then I said, why don't you speak up and say something? And she said, because in our culture, you know, if you don't agree with the CEO's approach and everybody, I could have got fired. So instead of getting fired, I just went and found another job. And you know, Chris, high performers will find jobs elsewhere.
That's right. Yeah, you lose your top people because they have the most ability to just get up and leave and you're stuck with everybody else. So it's really, really important that you figure that out pretty quickly and how you can communicate that a lot better.
It is. So going back to, can you share a little bit about why transparency is so important when it comes to creating a great culture?
Sure. So if we want people to be invested in this job, if we want them to be, you know, as close to as invested as maybe a senior leader is or the owner, I mean, I think it's impossible for someone who's getting paid a salary or an hourly wage to have the same level of involvement or, you know, engagement as, let's say, the CEO. But if we are hoping that they can have a high level, they need to understand what we're doing, why we're doing it, what our goals are. What are our team members' goals? What's our boss's goals? What are other team's goals? Like, what is everybody actually trying to do? And are we aligned? Is there, you know, this sort of synergy between all these different people's goals and team's goals? Or are we all fighting? Have you intentionally or unintentionally set us all up to go to war, you know, gladiator style for resources in the organization? There are companies that do this, right? That they figure, well, the top people will rise to the top and the bottom ones we'll get rid of and we'll cut the last 10% and bring in new people. But they've intentionally set it up that way. You know, knowing that's pretty important. You know, am I being set up for success? Can everyone be successful here or only certain people? But I think more importantly is if something happens, And I, as the employee, am noticing something's going on with a particular person or a team, but I don't know why. And I see there's a problem. And I'm like, let's just say the IT team is having a huge problem. And I go, The last time this happened in my job two jobs ago, when that happened, there were huge layoffs. The company was in trouble. And so immediately you fill in the gap of what you don't know with your past negative experience.
100%.
Right? And so what we need is to go back and tell people the truth. And the truth might be, well, here's the real reason why it's not a problem. It's just that we have this other thing going on. Or, yes, we are having a problem, and here's exactly what the problem is, and here's what we're doing to solve it. So at least you know what the real issue is, and it's not this other made-up thing that you put in there to make yourself feel better. I found, even when I brought bad news to my people, and I was honest about it, no one freaked out. Nobody left to go get another job. They were like, okay, we get it. We understand now that we've got to help and that there's going to be this problem, or maybe money's going to be a little short, or we're going to be able to hire for a little while, but we understand the problem. We understand what you're going to do about it. And then I kept, you know, letting them know how it was going and what progress we were making. Nobody ever freaked out. And I think that's always what leaders are worried about, is everyone's going to freak out. If you tell them things are too good, they're going to ask for a raise. If you tell them things are too bad, they're going to leave. And neither ever happened to me when I shared everything with everybody. That those the two worries that I and everyone else had never happened.
One of the things you said a little earlier, and I don't want to get off on a tangent, but you said that knowing what other people's goals are as well as yours. I mean, that's just, I bet you in most organizations that doesn't happen at all, unless you have like a really, you know, dialed in OKR or rocks or something that's very visible. But that's a huge component right there, is just knowing that everybody, let's get everybody aligned instead of like maybe even in competing interests. But to go back what we were just talking about, I've found that I'm with you on that. Sharing, you know, being transparent and open and having those conversations with people, the first reaction I always see is that they just kind of relax a little bit. They just relax a little bit. And then they kind of lean forward and like, okay, let's figure out what we need to do. And where do we go from here? And I've heard you say this before too, and I've seen the same thing. Then you start getting ideas bubbling up from everywhere, right? From frontline workers, from different divisions. And what I like to say too is at that point, you know, if times are really tough, then you're going in as a team, as an organization, you know, as a driving force to help your company get better.
Yeah. I mean, when we told people how we were spending the money, and all of a sudden they started coming to us with ideas on how to save money.
Love it.
Ideas that we never thought
of. Isn't that awesome?
They're there on the front line. On the flip side, with sharing each other's goals, it does make sure that we're being equitable about our goals, that we're not like asking way more of one person because we think they're a high performer and way less of somebody else. Things get a little bit more, when there's transparency, a little bit more fair to everybody. And we can talk about maybe why your goal is one thing and somebody else's is another, and all of that. And I think leaders kind of like, oh, I don't want to have those conversations. I want to figure that out. But once they do, you find that the team starts coming together and rallying for each other. And they're like, listen, I've hit 9 out of 10 of my goals, and it's March. And like over here, John and Sally are not hitting their goals. I can help them a little bit. Because isn't the company going to do better if everyone is getting their goals done? I mean, they all have some, you know, piece, some fraction of the overall success for the company. And if one person meets their goals and three don't, that's not very good for the organization. So I noticed that teams started pooling and started helping and started lifting each other up and strategizing and training and coaching and like doing everything they could to help somebody else along. And if a team member still can't make it, then it's a really easy conversation of it's time to go, right? If we're all clear on our goals, we've all helped you, we're all doing it, giving you every chance, every resource, and you still can't do it, this is the wrong job for you. You know, it's time to go. And that's okay too. Like, it's okay to realize that someone's not the right person in an organization and to be fair to them, that maybe this isn't the right role for you and there's something else out there that you will love and be successful at.
I totally agree with that. A lot of times, especially when I'm coaching newer managers and they get super stressed out about having to let somebody go, when it's really apparent that they don't belong there, you're doing them a favor. You know, you really are, as long as it's not a surprise for them when you sit down with them, right? But they're probably coming to the office every day freaking miserable, right? And they probably are a good person and they probably have great strengths and they probably belong somewhere else. And when you're not making that change, everybody else in your organization is seeing what you're doing and you're allowing this behavior and it brings them down. Like, why do I have to work so hard? That's one. The other thing that you brought up a moment ago, which I think leaders should look out for and maybe have a tip, is that high performers tend to get penalized in the sense that you just keep throwing stuff on their plate, right? We had a guy, Jose, on my team, Jose Castro, with me for 20 years, such a good guy. But he got overwhelmed with work because everybody just taught you, like, Jose will get it done. Jose will get it done. What advice do you have for leaders to be mindful of that, to make sure that doesn't happen?
So there's two things. Number one, we should be asking people who would like to help with this. We need to go to our team, go to our group and say, hey, here's this new thing. Who would like to do that? As opposed to, I forget if you said it was Victor, what the name was, but hey, this person is a high performer. We know they always get it done. Let's give it to them because it needs to be done quickly and done right. We need to give everyone that opportunity. Now, that person may step up sometimes and say, oh, I'd love to do that one. Okay, cool. They've decided on their own that they want to take that on. But usually what we see is that people who have a particular ability or and maybe there's a skill that would go well with that, or maybe they have the bandwidth at that moment to do it, and we let them come in and fill that gap up. Or maybe they're going to work together with that other high performer and so that they can learn from them and they can, you know, it'd be a better experience. It's not so overwhelming for that high performer. That's number one. But number two is I used to have a quarterly meeting with my senior team, and I would ask them what new things they have taken on and what things have they let go of. And I find that letting go of tasks is where people fail. They always end up taking on a new thing. Oh yeah, I'll do that. I will do this. And they never let go of something. They never say, well, maybe we don't need this report anymore. Maybe we don't need this meeting anymore. Maybe I can delegate. It is important that this report gets done, but maybe I don't need to be the one who does it anymore. I've been here 2 years. I've moved up in the company. Why am I still doing this? This somebody below me could do this report that's important. And that is, I think, probably the most important thing we can do to help keep our top performers, our people who are always say yes, who are so good at helping the organization, to not get overwhelmed. Because if you don't do that, the only way for them to be set free is for them to leave. Because when they leave, now they're starting at zero at a new company and they'll just do the same thing. They'll build and build and build and get more and more responsibility and then they leave that company. And so you have to kind of do this like tailoring or, you know, cutting a little bit of tasks. If you're really good, you get in the habit as a manager when you give someone a task to ask them at that moment, now, what else are you going to get rid of? I'm giving you this new thing. What are you going to let go of? Like, it's got to be a trade-off here. You're not just going to work more hours and work more days to be able to do that. That's not healthy.
I also think that what it brings up is that the high performer, once again, it's kind of a theme here in our conversation, they need to feel comfortable enough to be able to come to their manager and say, hey, Chris, I'm just taking on too much here, right? There's got to be an open lines of communication where they feel they can say this as well. My other question I had kind of going back and is, how do you help people get in the mindset of, we don't need this report anymore? Or you know, this is how we've always done it, but we need to move. How do you get beyond that? Because I see that so often where it's like, well, we've always had that report. Well, when is it used? What are you going to do with it?
You know, I think it's a lot of times getting them to think about what is it we want, to dream about what we want the organization to be or this team or your career or whatever. What is it you want to be in the future? And now let's design that. So we want this team to do this thing or be this way. Now, what does that actually mean? What are the tasks? What are the things that we have to prioritize? And then talk about what those are. And then it usually becomes pretty obvious that there's a whole bunch of other stuff that we're doing that's not a part of what we see as being a part of our success in the future. And that's often the way to say, okay, now how do we cut some of this stuff out? How do we cut retool, deprioritize, you know, reassign, whatever it is. Because, you know, maybe the report is important, but maybe it's not important that you do it. And often once you delegate it out and it's no longer that person doing it, you notice, and then that kind of dies. It goes
kind of sunset.
It was important because they were.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And it's kind of like almost like a crutch for them. No. So we, a minute ago, kind of switched gears a little bit. We were talking about high performers leaving, and prior to getting, you know, coming live, we talked about the great resignation. And can you share with our listeners the recent poll you saw in Gallup and what's going on with the great resignation right now in, let's say, August 2024?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen recently from Gallup summary research that engagement is at an all-time low. And, you know, it's for a lot of reasons. There's a lot going on. There's stuff in politics. There's, you know, coming out of COVID and all of the, you know, just absolutely people working and going nuts and then not traveling and then traveling too much. And then it was all these like overdoing behaviors. And then we've seen companies have this massive success. And then, you know, the economy kind of did a reset and leveled out as it should. And then maybe some companies weren't doing as well. And then there was that pressure. It was all these different factors. But we've just sort of seen this slight unrest. And what we didn't see from companies was that they tried to do more for culture. So during COVID, managers actually took off their, you know, their armor.
Huh?
And
they went all
and
in.
Did a little bit more of the kumbaya and was like, we're all in this together and let's talk about this. And let's, you know, because there was a bigger event. B, we had more time. We actually had a little bit of time. And when COVID first happened, like there was managers spending 3 hours talking to their team about how they felt. They don't spend 3 hours a year sometimes talking to people about how they feel, you know, and they were doing this all the time. And so employees felt suddenly so heard and seen. And then they said, and you can keep working remote. So like, you know, you don't have to sit in traffic for 2 hours and you don't have to spend all your money on gas and you don't have to do all this stuff. And then they backpedaled on all that. And so you have, there's all these like little stressors and kind of points. So you have that, people are disengaged. I think we could see it may be held off until after the election, but I do think there's going to be another great resignation 2.0 where there's going to be a lot of job switching. As soon as the market really feels like, okay, you know, unless there's a recession, unless there's some other larger event that changes that trajectory and people don't feel like they have to stay, we're at that point where enough's enough. I'm a high performer. I've been here long enough. I can go get more money and a better job somewhere else. And there's going to be a whole bunch of trading and, you know, recruiters are going to make a lot of money, but everyone else is going to spend a lot of money.
Great point. And, you know, the election is a little ways off. What can, and I don't think we can go back to COVID times either, where we're spending 3 hours a day talking about feelings and, you know, weekly Zoom meetings for everybody, but there's got to be a happy medium. So what can leaders and what can organizations do now to cut that off so that when people do feel comfortable and have that opportunity to go out and leave, that's prevented, that they feel that they're heard and they're welcome and they're excited to be at the organization they are at?
So as leaders, we need to be looking for those opportunities to have those moments with our team. And the best way I know how to do that is an exercise called bonding. Now, we suggested that every team, the people that you work with on a regular basis, not sort of strangers in the organization, but the people you mostly work with most of the time, that no more than once a day. If they couldn't do it every day, that's okay. But we really encourage the manager to do this once a day with their team, to come in and ask everyone, how are you showing up? So on a meeting that's 30 minutes or longer, go around the room, how are you showing up? And the more they do this, the better the answers get. In the beginning, it's going to be, yeah, I'm fine, you know, whatever. And then like later on, it's going to be, I'm exhausted. I haven't slept in 3 days. We got a brand new puppy. Or, you know, I could tell you right now, my wife had surgery yesterday. I'm literally after this podcast going to go run and go check on her, make sure she doesn't need to go to the bathroom. Like, you know, I've got a little stress in my life right now because there's something going on that's abnormal for me. And when we go around and we share all of that, if there is a moment for somebody where we go, oh, you just found out your mom has breast cancer. Like, okay, time out. What do you need from us? How can we support you? Do you need time off? Do you need to talk about it? Do we need to take a little bit of work off of your plate for next couple of weeks until you figure out what's going on? Cause maybe you're freaking out right now. Like, how do we as a team and the manager help you in this moment where there is high stress? There is this thing, because it's not, and during COVID, we were all screwed, all high stress.
Totally. Totally. Yeah.
But now, here when things are a little back to normal, we can kind of, search for, there's a problem with this person. Now, how do we help you? And also demonstrate to the team, it's okay to talk about this. I'm going to show you empathy. We're going to do something about it when we discover it. And so that works really good. And then at the end of the meeting, so you have whatever little meeting or stand-up thing you're going to do. At the end of the meeting, you go around and you say, how are you leaving? And I find this answer is a bit more of the employee answer. So we'll get things like, I really feel like the solution worked. I'm glad we finally talked about this. I can go back to the client. Or, we're not ready. Chris, I know you thought that it's time to go to the client with the solution. I don't think it's ready at all. We're going to need another meeting. Like, so you kind of get like, oh, as the leader, you're like, we did not have the meeting I thought we just had, right? My perception of what just happened is different, or someone else on the team is not seeing it how the rest of us saw it. So like, how do I go address that? How do I help them? Because otherwise they're going to come back with passive aggressive behaviors. They're not going to do the thing. They're going to pretend they didn't get the email. They're going to slow roll because they're not happy yet. They're not at that point where they're, to your point, being on a railroad track. We're not all going the same way in the same time. The big caveat here is that when you do this, you as the leader or whoever the most senior people on the team are, they have to go last. So don't go, hey, I heard this crazy guy on the podcast. He has this cool exercise. We're all going to go around and say, how are you showing up? I, as a senior leader, I'm going to go first to show you. Wrong. You got to go last. And if your people are struggling, if someone in that group needs help, no one gives a bleep about what you're going through as a leader. So if someone says, hey, my mom has breast cancer, I'm freaking out, stop the meeting. You don't get to share a senior leader. Focus on them, right? We're going to stop and help this person who's in need right now and show them that we care about them. If everyone on your team is okay and they're all doing well, that's when they're okay listening to you saying whatever it is you're going to complain about as a senior leader, whether it's personal or company-wide or whatever. And that's for both of those questions. Otherwise, you just suck all the air out of the room if you're like, no, I'll go first. Everything is awesome. Yeah, I just got a raise. I got a new BMW and I'm getting a promotion next week.
Or even worse, I'm having a terrible day. My BMW got a flat tire. My kid's private school teacher that we pay $50,000 a year to go to didn't show up. I mean, people, you know, that makes it worse. But so I think this is great. So this is something you do daily as a team. And typically, let's say if you have 10 people on your team, or 8 or 10 in this group, how long would a meeting like that last? I'm asking these questions for selfish reasons, because I'm going to turn around and do this. So how long would a meeting like that last?
I mean, I would be really hesitant to do it with more than 10 people. I would feel like, especially if, right, like max. So you can always kind of play around with this, right? So maybe you have an hour-long meeting 3 times a week and you put it there because you have 10 people, 12 people, and that's going to give you a little bit more time to do it. If you had 5 to 7 people, I'd put it in a 30-minute meeting. Now, if you don't meet with your team every single day on a consistent basis, that's okay. Just put it wherever it makes sense to kind of figure it out. But ideally, you're trying to do it once a day. If you get it done 3 times a week, you're doing great. Even if you only did it once a week, that's not great, but it's better than nothing. At least you're getting some check-in. So how long it should take? In the beginning, it's going to take a lot longer. Or actually, the first couple times you do it, it's going to be pretty quick. Then all of a sudden, they're going to figure it out and it's going to take a lot longer. And then you'll kind of back. And I think it might take 5 to 8 minutes at the most to go through 8 to 10 people. It should not be very long. Because most people be like, hey, I'm doing pretty good. you know, I'm a little overworked right now. I got this big report happening, but, you know, I'm feeling pretty good. Okay. I mean, that took like 10 seconds for them to tell you. Somebody else might come in and say, you know, I just had to put my cat down and my husband's the worst and, blah, blah, you know, whatever. And then, okay, we got to spend a little bit more time right. with you. Also, that's really good for the manager to kind of see how are people interacting. And it's a good coaching session of like, if the same person has all this drama and is constantly complaining every single time you do this, go back and talk to that person. Like, hey, we really want to focus on like the big things that might be holding you back. Like, you know, this is not your diarrhea of the mouth.
Well, you basically answered the question I was going to say, because I'm like, well, what do you do if one person just captures the meeting all the time and it's just a constant diarrhea of the mouth? And then the rest of the group turns there and they're just like, oh man, here comes Susie again, you know?
And that's the coaching session you need to have with that person, because they're doing that all the time in every flipping meeting. Oh, right. And so it's like we're almost practicing. You know, I talk a lot about with culture, we don't practice very much. If you've ever played a sport, played an instrument, like, you know, you practice yoga, or you do something, like you practice the thing all the time. And very rarely do you go and show up and have to perform and to do something like at a concert or in a game or a match or whatever. Yet in business, we do the opposite. We ask people to show up and perform, and we never practice with them the behaviors that we want them to have or what's going to be good or what's going to work here. And so these little exercises and things that I usually teach my clients are little ways for us to practice behavior. And to talk and to kind of figure out what is the norms here. That's what culture is the norms of how we get things done. And so if the norm is you're struggling, we're going to listen to you and we're going to help, man, you're going to feel supported. If the norm is we're going to hear you, we don't give a crap, and we're going to keep going anyways and give you 5 more projects, now you know, and you can make a decision if you want to stay or go. So, you know, but it's a good way for leaders, I think, to kind of, this is the one that really helps, especially if you're remote. How do you know if someone's struggling if you don't see them? I mean, it's one thing, we see each other here, but like, you don't know, are my legs crossed? Am I showing body language that's like not agreeing or being upset? Can you really tell, if I don't have my camera on, do you know if I've just been crying for the last 30 minutes? But like in the office, you can pick up on that stuff. And I think that's why some leaders struggled with remote work, because they relied so much on proximity to be able to see that person and judge their body language and how they acted to determine if they're okay or what's going on with them and all of that. And so this is a way, especially if you have people on Zoom, or on Teams, to be able to connect with them in a much deeper way that doesn't require them to be all sitting in a conference room.
No, I think that's great. And I think sometimes as well, what you said is true. If you rely on proximity and you happen to walk down the hall and, you know, somebody's kind of slumped over, then yeah, sure, you see it. But if you're on Zoom, sometimes you get caught up in your own day, your own week, your own month, and you have no idea what's going on. I got a question, another one more question for you on this, but I'd also want to add to that for senior leaders. When you have these meetings, you got to be dialed in. You can't be asking the questions and then texting somebody on the side too, right? I mean, because then you're just ruining the purpose of it if you're not present with them.
It's probably one of the biggest things that we have to send that message. And I've had to do this with my clients. Like I've been on with like client calls and like you can see them, they're answering things and this. I'm like, also, I'm like, hey, you guys want to hang out and you want to talk like for the next 30 minutes, I'm here, but we need to be, let's focus and let's talk about it. And if we're done in 25 minutes or 20 minutes, then go do your other thing. Like it drives me nuts if people are like, I understand like sometimes something needs to happen. Like, you know, I've had my phone like buzz like 900 times. I look down and my wife's like, call me now. Like, you know, something happens. But in general, if you're just trying to do busy work while you're trying to do a meeting, you're not paying attention. Multitasking doesn't work. Go look it up. There's 1,000 bits of research that says our brains cannot focus on these different stimuli. In fact, it can take us 7 to 15 minutes to restart our brain and get refocused again into what's happening. You know, I used to have a therapist I went to, and he would be talking and he'd get a message on his watch and he would go, and then and he'd lose his whole like train of thought.
on your dime. On your dime.
On my dime. I was like, hey, you got to stop wearing your watch.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And well, first of all, I'm sorry about your wife, and I hope your wife's doing better, right?
Everything's good. Yeah.
And I want to be respectful of your time, and I know that we're coming up on time here, but there's one question that I definitely wanted to ask. And I was listening to a podcast you're on, and I actually cracked up. In 2018, you just literally said yes to everything?
Yes. Yes. Best decision I ever
made. What made you decide to even, how did that even come up as an idea?
Yeah, I don't know if it was 2018, if it was a little bit later, but I remember my wife listening to a book by Shonda Rhimes called A Year of Yes. Now, I had seen the Jim Carrey movie about this, and there's actually an old English story that was the original version of this about a guy who said yes to everything and what happened in his life. And it's a comedy thing, and the Jim Carrey movie was a comedy thing. But Shonda Rhimes, and if you don't know who she is, she was the writer for Grey's Anatomy and all these like great shows that I don't want to watch with my wife that are on.
I'm with you.
ABC.
My wife loves Grey's Anatomy.
But they're, you know, hits, and she's a fantastic writer. And she did this book and talked about how she did A Year of Yes and how it changed her life. And so my wife was listening to this book and I'm listening to her talk. And what the little line was that I guess she got invited to the White House or something for an award. And she thought, oh, this is cool. And her sister turned to her and said, yeah, but you're not going to go. She goes, what do you mean? She goes, well, you say no to everything. And it was at one of those moments, right, of like, oh, I need to change my behavior. And so she started saying yes. And that was a big, even though she had had success in her life, that really catapulted her success to like the next level by her saying yes to more things, going to the White House, going to these places, you know, that gave her more opportunities. And so I thought, why not? Now, I didn't tell anybody I was going to do it. And I used yes and yes but to help me, you know, navigate tricky situations that I didn't necessarily, you know, want to be in. Like, I mean, somebody said, well, what would happen if, you know, a woman came up to you and wanted to make out with you? Would you be cheating on her? I would say yes, but you need my wife's permission first. Right? There's a way to get around. You can say yes without having to say no. And that's a ridiculous situation, but like that's usually where everyone's brain goes, to these extremes, right? And but there's a way to deal with it. I mean, somebody said, well, what happens if I would ask you to go make meth with me? And I'd be like, yes, but you need to go change the rules. You know, the laws need to be changed. Like it would be this whole like a way to get out of it. But what I found in general was that I ended up in places that I would have said no to. Like at a conference that I had no business going to and making some of the best friends I've ever made and going somewhere that I would showed up and I was like, why am I here? This is not a good use of my time. And then I would find a great client or I end up getting invited to go do a speech somewhere. Like these things kept happening that I never expected because I said yes. And once that started happening, I got really addicted to the whole like saying yes thing all the time. And I would show up. And I was almost manifesting this. I would just show up and be like, okay, I said yes to this stupid thing. What awesome thing's going to happen now? And I was expecting this great things to happen. And they kept happening because I was totally open to it.
And that's the key. You're open to it.
I was open to it. So I think if you're struggling, if you're not happy with where your life is, or you feel like you don't like being the no person. I know a lot of people that don't like it. They feel like they have to, but they have to say no. You don't. Just go try it for like the rest of the day. Don't tell anyone you're going to do it. Just try it. Say yes. Yes, and yes, but. And watch people like totally change with you. Their reactions, their behaviors, their energy. Everything gets better. Everything.
Thank you for sharing that. I think that's awesome. And I got a couple people that I don't know if they'll go for it or not, but they definitely could use more of just letting go, being open and saying yes. I think that is a freaking great story. We're coming up on time here. So, Chris, where can our listeners get in touch with you?
First, if you're interested in that one question survey I talked about, I have a whole starter, 25 questions and some different ideas about how to have cool meetings. You can text 33777 and then put my name as the message, just Chris. And I'll immediately get you out that PDF for free and no obligation. Happy to support you. Also, you can go to my website, chrisdyer.com. I'm on TikTok. I'm on Instagram. I do a ton of stuff there. Let's connect on LinkedIn. Like there's a million places to find me. I will say yes, because you already heard I like to say yes and connect with you. So if anybody needs help, maybe you have a leadership event or need a keynote speaker, I'd love to say yes. So come find me. I'm anywhere and we can connect.
Well, this has been great. I mean, we talked about everything from what great leadership looks like, the importance of being transparent and removing roadblocks from for your employees, you know, stepping out of their way so you're not the bottleneck yourself as a senior leader. I think a lot of senior leaders struggle with that. And I really like as well, in our conversation around the great resignation, was the bonding exercise. And that is something that can be a low-hanging fruit that people can just implement now. You don't need to have a bunch of technology or whatever. You could just get going, right?
It's easy. It's free. You don't need anyone's permission to do it. Just go do it.
Anything else you want to leave our audience with before we go?
No. I appreciate you having me on. And I hope everyone can take something today between what you and I said and make their work better. And that's the point.
You're awesome. So that's a wrap for us, everybody. And if you enjoyed this episode with Chris Dreyer, like it, share it, subscribe to the Learn It All podcast. And until next time, remember, stay curious and keep learning. Goodbye, everyone.